This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we take the pursuit of happiness from the abstract to the concrete. This week, we'll talk about why you should make introductions and explore the question of how to create more effective accountability for obligers. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, human nature, and the four tendencies. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister Elizabeth Kraft, who has so often graciously served as my experimental happiness guinea pig.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And yeah, Gretch, sometimes I'm kicking and screaming, but I do try to be your happiness guinea pig.
Now, Elizabeth, quick update. We got a fun email from our listener, Susan, about our discussion in episode 189 about being tempted by the snacks in hotel minibars. She sent an article from the Times UK where British journalist and author Satnam Singera wrote, and he's so very British in his choice of words, I thought, in this piece about how he finds accountability.
Yes, he said, "How on earth does one resist hitting these in-room corner shops? I have so little discipline that this week I considered calling hotels in advance to remove the food. Fearing this might mark me out as peculiar, I settled instead on bringing along my own healthy snacks as a distraction, only to eat all the fruit in addition to the 5-pound tube of Pringles in the room. So it's time for a new strategy. When I'm next in a hotel, I'm going to have the bill sent to my mum's address. The fear of her outrage, if she sees that I've spent £7 on a crunchy chocolate bar, will surely be enough."
Yeah, £7 is $9.
Yeah.
So I love this account.
Use your mom as your accountability partner. She's always a good one.
That's right. I love that. I love that suggestion. And Elizabeth, this week our Try This at Home tip is to make an introduction. This is a wonderful good deed, a manageable good deed that we can do for other people.
Yes, the world runs on introductions. Gretch, I am proud to tell you that I introduced two people to their spouses.
Wow. On like actual like blind date setup type things?
No, in both cases it was unintentional, I must admit, but two people who I was very good friends with broke up, Bob and Nancy, and then I introduced each of them, again, unintentionally, to their spouses.
Wow.
And so they credit me with that. And it always makes me feel so good when I think, oh, you guys are together because I introduced you. This child exists in the world because I introduced you. Yes. It's a good feeling.
It's powerful. Well, you know what? I've often thought that there should be a wedding tradition of somehow marking out the person at the wedding, if that person's there, who introduced two people. Like they should get like a little crown or like a little, I don't know, some kind of token.
That's fun.
I think that would be fun. Now, this make an introduction is a great example of some very well-known research about weak ties, which is that often when we make really excellent introductions, or it comes from people who are weak ties to us, not the strongest ties. And the theory is because people who have strong ties to you, they know everything you know. They know all the same people you know. But if it's weak ties, then they're introducing you to people that or ideas or opportunities that are really kind of outside your natural reach. And so this is a place where you really could introduce somebody to somebody that they would never otherwise meet and date, or someone that they might never otherwise meet and hire or whatever. And so that's a great example.
Yeah. No, they always say when you're looking for a job, like your best friend's not going to get you a job, but like your best friend's neighbor might get you a job.
Well, see, and I think this is why the try this at home to make an introduction is important to keep in mind, because sure, you're going to make an introduction for your best friend, but it might be like doing it for your best friend's neighbor is where you could really play a more useful role. So I think this is a place to push yourself to do it, not just when you feel like, well, of course I'm going to do that, but on the edge. When you're like, well, am I going to extend myself to do this? Like, oh, it's kind of a pain in the neck to like get someone's email address and sort of put myself out there. But it's like, it's when it's on the outer reaches of people's circles, that's often where the power is. And so if everybody would really force themselves to try to make introductions whenever they thought they could be helpful, we could really, really help each other out.
And some people are just naturals at this. Like I work with a woman named Lori Zaks. She's been on Happier in Hollywood. She's a producer, and Lori just introduces people very naturally. It's just her personality.
Yeah.
She's always saying, oh, you need to meet this person and you need to have this person on your podcast. I'm going to give them your email address. And it's like she connects so many people, and it's such a great quality. It reminds me of the very famous New Yorker article that Malcolm Gladwell wrote called 6 Degrees of Lois Weisberg.
Yeah. Some people are just natural at that. I have a friend, Kim Scott, who wrote Radical Candor and had the Radical Candor podcast. For some reason, the people that she introduced just stick. Like so many people in my life somehow are connected to me through Kim, and I don't know. And we've all talked about it. We're like, what is it that Kim does that's different? What does Lori do that's different? Maybe it's just sheer magnitude. It's just doing it consistently over and over that you just get a bigger. I do think one of the things that people who do this well are usually do is they ask if they can introduce you. People sometimes will connect people, and one of those people doesn't want to be connected. I think if you are making introductions, you have to say, I'd love to put you in touch with this person, or I'd love to make an e-introduction. Are you open to that? So if a person, for whatever reason, wants to say no, they don't feel like you've sort of exposed them in their email to somebody when they didn't want that. So it's something to be aware of. Yeah.
Yes, that's a great point. And I just did this, I'm happy to say.
Oh, Gretchen. What'd you do?
Well, an author, a young adult book author, reached out to me, and she really wanted an introduction to my friend Melissa De La Cruz, who's a big young adult author and who has a festival, a book festival every year. She said, I'd love to try to be a part of the festival. I know you're friends with Melissa. You know, could you put me in touch with her? And so I reached out to Melissa and asked, and Melissa said yes. And I introduced them, and I don't know what it will come of it, but I felt good that I actually followed through instead of just ignoring the email, which is what I am ashamed to say I often do because I feel so overwhelmed. But I said, let me take a few minutes and make this introduction.
Well, it's one of those things when you're like, does this take a lot of time and energy? In a way, no, because like if you just actually looked at how many minutes on the clock it took, it didn't take that many, but it does take a lot of weird mental energy to kind of put yourself forward and to make that kind of social connection. So,
and you are putting yourself on the line because you're sort of endorsing someone. When you introduce two people, there's a sense that you're saying, this is a good person to know. I think this person is trustworthy. I think this person has something to offer. So it is sharing a bit of yourself.
Yeah. And that's where the good comes from. I mean, do good, feel good. It makes you feel good. Like you say, you feel good when you've helped people in this way. But here's something I would say. Is don't be upset if you try to connect people and they don't follow up. Because I think sometimes people don't follow up for whatever reason, you know? And I think we never want to get in a situation where we're like, I'm going to volunteer to do something nice for someone and then get super annoyed with them if for some reason they don't act the way you want. This is something to do because you want to be helpful and put it out in the world. But like sometimes, you know, it's like people like, oh, you're moving to Chicago. My best friend from college lives in Chicago. Let me introduce you two, and you two would be great friends. And then that person doesn't follow up. It's like, don't get annoyed by that, you know, mm-hmm. because it's like you tried. Sometimes you put these things out in the world and they don't go the way you think, but you just sort of have to do your best.
Yeah, but sometimes you'll get a wedding out of it. So yeah. It's always worth trying.
It's always worth trying. Do good, feel good, make an introduction. Let us know if you tried this at home and how making an introduction worked out for you. Let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com or go to happiercast.com/194. This is episode 194 for everything related to this episode.
All right, Gretchen, you are on a happiness hack streak. You've got another happiness hack you're very excited about coming up. But first, this break.
There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/happier. That's StoryWorth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Gretchen, it's time for a happiness hack, and you've got one that will help with travel.
Yes, I've been traveling a lot. I've been doing a lot of speaking lately, and I realized that I had kind of, without quite articulating it, developed what I think is a very important happiness hack, and I've used it in the past, and now I want to share it, which is when you are traveling, have an emergency book in mind. And what I mean by that is a book that if you all of a sudden find yourself without something to read on a plane or, you know, on the train or whatever you're doing, have a book in mind to choose.
So what do you mean by an emergency book?
So an emergency book, okay, so it's an emergency situation. You're like, oh my gosh, I need reading material, like desperately. So it needs to be a book in mind that you've identified, like the name and the author, and it's a book that would be widely available even in a very small commercial bookstore. So like the kind of bookstore that you'd find in an airport or in a big train station. It's something that has that you know is good. You know, lots of people have enjoyed it, and it's probably reasonably accessible. I think it's true for me, and I think it's true for most people. Traveling is not necessarily the best time to read something that's very dense or like takes enormous amounts of concentration. You want something that's got a little bit of that page-turner quality to it. And ideally, it's in paperback so that it's cheaper and easier to carry. So something that has just come out maybe isn't as good an emergency book as a paperback.
Yeah, this is such a good idea because I can't tell you how many times I've rushed into an airport bookstore, not had an emergency book. So therefore, just like pick something blindly and then not liked it and then sort of been stuck on the airplane bored by my book.
Well, see, this happened to me years ago, and I think that's why I developed this hack for myself, which is I will deliberately hold back from reading or buying a book that I otherwise want to read because I'm like, oh, that's such a good emergency book.
What's your emergency book right now, Gretch?
Okay. My emergency book is a book called A Man Called Uwe by Frederick Backman. And yes, that is how you pronounce Uwe. I looked it up. Because this is a book that many people have said, oh, you should read this book. It's really a good read. And it's very common. So that's my emergency book right now. Now, I would say it would be, even though it's still out in hardback, it would be Tana French's book, The Witch Elm, because Tana French is very reliable. But somebody gave me the book, so now I have it at home. So I wouldn't want to buy it in a bookstore because I hate whenever I have to buy duplicates of something that I already own. But I will say that for many years, and this is such a good emergency book that it's, I'll just throw it out there because it's probably in a lot of bookstores all the time, is Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. That was a really good emergency book.
A good saga.
Yeah.
Now, we should point out, Gretch, sometimes you need to switch up your emergency book because if it's something that is very popular for a time, it may not stay on the bookshelf forever. So you kind of want to refresh the emergency book.
Absolutely, because in fact, for like a year, my emergency book was Elizabeth Kostova's book, The Historian, which was like super popular about 8 years ago, and it would have been everywhere. But now you don't really see that book. That's why Larry McMurtry is like kind of like the emergency emergency book, because that's a book that really has gone into that like ever, like it's in a
classic.
Lot of places. Classic. It's kind of a classic airport bookstore. But I think it's really good because, as you say, it's when you're rushing. Because you're like, oh my gosh, I had all this great time on the airplane or on the train to read, and I blew it because I like randomly picked up this book that turned out not to be good. Whereas if I'd had this book in mind, I could have made a beeline for it, bought it, and then had all this great reading time.
Yeah, I need to pick one, Gretch. I don't have one. So if anyone has great suggestions for an emergency book, send them to us.
Yes, absolutely.
And I like fiction on a plane, so fiction choices, please. I don't, unless it's a memoir. A juicy memoir. I want to read fiction on a plane or a train.
Yeah. And Alyssa, now it's time for a four tendencies tip. How I love to talk about the tendencies. And we got a question from a listener.
Yes, this came from Rose. She said, I'm an RN getting a certification in health coaching and a question or two. So here is my question. Lately, I've tried starting a few accountability groups for different health habits, including sleep, food tracking, a walking group, and an all-women's group for pickup sports games. I've noticed a trend in almost every group, with the exception of the sports. There's initial interest with about 7 to 10 people participating and requesting to be part of the group. There's a huge fall off after the first week to about half the initial number. Subsequent weeks, it's maybe 1 to 2 people. The weird thing is that even though people stop participating in the group, when I run into them face to face, they'll bring up their group, thank me profusely for keeping them in the group, and tell me how they will for sure try to make it to the next meeting, which of course they do not show up to. The only exception has been the soccer pickup game I organize. What do you make of this? What strategies do I do to keep people coming? So far, I have tried getting people to commit early in the week because I figured all the obligers would feel compelled to come after committing. Nope. Yeah, so Gretchen, I think this is such a common occurrence. What would you say to Rose?
Okay, so many thoughts. So Rose, here, the clue for you is who comes. The people who come are the people who come to the sports games. So what is the difference between the sleep, the food tracking, and the walking group and the sports games? The sports games can only happen if people show up. That creates true accountability for obligers because they're like, if I say I'm going to come to the soccer game and I don't show, then maybe no one will be able to play. So I have to come because nobody can play without me. The thing about the sleep, the food tracking, and the walking, this is to benefit the obligers themselves. So you feel like you're creating outer accountability, but to these obligers, they're thinking, well, I'm really doing this for me. It doesn't feel like there. Some of them, a few of them feel like obliged to you because they said they would show up. But for many of them, it's really an inner expectation. So what you need to do is to communicate to these obligers, not, hey, I'm here for you. You want to communicate, I'm counting on you. I'm expecting you. I'm waiting for you. We can't move forward if you don't participate. If you don't participate, others won't participate. You're letting them down because they won't go walking if they think that they don't have to. So others will lose out. And that's why the people are coming to the sports. And so you have to move the accountability outward. Now, one thing that you can do, I don't know that it would work with this kind of group, but it works with some groups, is to say, like I've heard this with like CrossFit, there are limited numbers. If you say you're coming, and then another person can't come because you've taken their space.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's funny because it's the same with Gretch. I've just joined this Mahjong group. Mm-hmm. These four of us are playing Mahjong.
Yes.
And I'm like, I have got to be there because you need four people. If one person doesn't show up, it's canceled.
Yes.
So it's really true that having the thing where the event can't happen without somebody is a big impetus to an obliger to show up.
Well, maybe with the walking group, you literally say, if we don't have four people, no one's going walking.
Yes.
Because
yes.
that might you might be like, well, but if even one person comes, it's worth it. It's like, no, because you, what you want is to create accountability. Yeah. So you have to have kind of that consequence that's happening. And here's another thing that I've heard from obligers is sometimes it's like there needs to be consequences for the leader. Like I remember somebody saying, I realized that if I didn't work on my PhD thesis, it didn't matter to my advisor. Like it didn't matter to her career whether or not I did what I needed to do. So if there's some way, I don't know how this would work in this context, but if you can sort of be like, this matters to me, like you're affecting kind of my fate or my sense of effectiveness or my certification or whatever it's doing. So that again, that's a form of like, well, I need to do this for you, even though I'm not doing it for me. Again, you want to create that feeling that the more you can weight it toward the outside, the more the obliger will follow through. And of course, these are all things that obligers do want to do for themselves. So it's not like you're forcing them to do something kind of against their will. You're just making it possible for them to follow through in a way that is really going to ultimately be to their benefit. But it's always about moving the weight of expectation to the outside. And so I think this is a perfect example because you see exactly how this is affecting obligers differently. Different accountability is yielding different results. So it's like a perfect test case.
So good luck, Rose. Good luck with your various groups. I hope people start showing up.
Yes, I hope so. Now it's time for listener question. As always, listener questions can go to 774-277-9336, which is 77-HAPPY-336, or email us or send us a voice memo at podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
And this week's question comes from our listener, Cassandra. She says, I am a total maximizer. I love research and I really can get carried away. I wanted to ask your advice on my digital hoarding habits. Being a maximizer and in the beginnings of starting my own freelance writing business and personal blog, I'm constantly bookmarking articles, signing up for this free course or that, or saving free PDFs offered up by entrepreneurs more experienced than I. As a result, I feel overwhelmed by the sheer amount of information I have yet to look at that sits in my inbox. My Pocket account, my browser bookmarks, a file on my computer, and even in the saved sections on my Facebook and LinkedIn accounts. I feel like a link hoarder. How do I deal with this? Do I delete everything and wipe the slate clean? Do I painstakingly go through everything and force myself to make a judgment call on whether it's valuable enough to keep or if I can just delete it? How do I prevent myself from adding more? Well, first of all, Kretch, it's so funny. I didn't even know you could hoard links this way. This is the first time hearing of it. But I bet a lot of people do this.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Cassandra describes herself as a maximizer versus a satisficer. I think that's useful to think about those terms. So a maximizer is somebody who wants to make the best choice to have like the best information, whereas satisficers just want to like have their standards met. So if both a maximizer and a satisficer were trying to buy a bicycle and they had certain criteria, the satisficer would buy a bicycle as soon as all the criteria would be met, whereas the maximizer would feel like, I have to know about every bike that's on the market so I can make the best possible choice. And so obviously, it's much more burdensome to be a maximizer. And interestingly, research shows they're less satisfied with their decisions. You'd think that they'd be more satisfied because they've done more exhaustive research, but actually satisficers tend to be more satisfied, like because they're like, this is what I wanted and this is what I got. And it saves them a lot of time and energy. So that's part of what's going on here.
Yeah. So what should she do? I mean, Gretchen, you are someone who collects quotes and things like that. How do you keep yourself from hoarding?
Well, this is the thing. I exactly know how Cassandra feels. It really can swamp you. There's so much information all the time. And if you're really interested in something, everything feels relevant. Mm. So, I'm too scared to try Evernote. People keep telling me Evernote. I'm like, I think I would just Evernote everything. And, it would be like this Borgesian nightmare where, everything would be saved. And now this is the way that I handle it. And maybe this would work for Cassandra. I type up notes. I will physically retype things. So if there's a quotation that I love, I have to type it into my folder of quotations, my file of quotations. If there's research that I want to remember or save in some way, I have to retype it. I have all the appropriate place for a bunch of different stuff, and I put it in there. And what this does is, first of all, it keeps you from, I can't consume more until I've handled what I have, so I can't get too far behind in my note-taking, because at some point I won't let myself take in any more information until I catch up. And it forces you to be very judicious, because retyping something is a burden. And so I can't just save an entire article. I have to have the discipline to go through and be like, what is it that is important to me? So I have to process it, which I also think helps me remember it better. Because the thing to remember, and Cassandra, I've reminded myself of this so many times, saving things means nothing. Remembering things, processing things, being able to have things in your own mind is what matters. And so don't allow yourself to get carried away with the fun of click, 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 save, save, save. You have to process it. And forcing yourself to process it will keep you from hoarding it, because you can't get too far in advance and you can't just save something big. It has to become small. Because you have to distill it. That's what works for me. I don't know if there's other things that work for people, but I suffer from this, and that's how I manage it.
Yeah, what I would say is she shouldn't let herself save a link unless she's at least looked at it and skimmed it enough to know if it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Don't just say, that headline looks like something I should read.
Yeah.
If it's not compelling enough to at least skim the first paragraph right now, then you probably don't need it.
Right. So to have kind of a initial sweep before something gets saved. And then also something like signing up for a free course. It's just have the rule for yourself. I can't sign up for another free course until I've taken the first free course. Don't get yourself so far ahead. You know what this reminds me of, Elizabeth, is when people want to buy knitting supplies or something. There's the fun of buying the stuff. But at a certain point, if you have too much that you haven't made use of, it kind of starts weighing on your conscience or weighing on your mind or at least crowding up your shelves. You have to have some way of saying, I'm not going to acquire more until I use at least part of what I have.
That's a good rule. I think people have a hard time following through, but it's a good rule to have.
So good luck, Cassandra. I feel your pain. I know that feeling of the infinite save. It's enticing, but then it can get dark.
Coming up, I give myself a predictable happiness demerit. But first, this break.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. Elizabeth, right this second, I am wearing my sweater from Quince. It's the Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater in Everglade green. It feels so great, and it came in so many gorgeous colors. I love this green.
Yeah, Gretchen, I got the same sweater in white, and I absolutely love it. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/Gretchen for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Gretchen to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Gretchen.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help children really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. I mean, when Eleanor was young, she really, really struggled with math, and a program like IXL would have really helped her to get ahead, to keep up, study for a test. It's a great tool.
Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And happier listeners get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/happier. Visit IXL.com/happier to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Okay, Elizabeth, it's episode 194, an even number episode, and that means it's your turn for demerit. What is this predictable demerit?
Yes, Gretchen, it has to do with my messiness. You know, I'm not the neatest person. We've discussed it. It's one of the big points of contention in my marriage. Adam's neat, I'm messy, we fight about it.
Adam's late, you're on time, you fight about
it. Yes, that's
like
our other thing. Those
repeat.
Are the two things, yes. But this is about my closet. So you might remember in my renovation, we had our closets done and built out very nicely. I had it all organized and I have allowed my closet to fall apart yet again. And I think I've actually given myself this demerit before, but I've gone from my nice, neat closet to the entire floor is covered with clothes, shoes, kimonos that I'm collecting my kimonos. It is just bad. And every weekend I say to Adam, it's during the week I say, oh, I'm gonna clean this up this weekend, and then now 3 or 4 weekends have gone by and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, and I have just been overwhelmed with it, and I have not tackled the closet. And now we don't have doors on our closet, so I can't even shut the door.
Well, can I just say that occurred to me at the time of your renovation? Why didn't you just have a door? Because the thing is, it really bothers you and it bothers Adam. Like, the door, it would still bother you, but then it wouldn't bother Adam. But it is bothering you, right?
Well, it's bothering me really because I know it bothers him. Don't care.
Oh, okay.
But I know that it bothers him, and so that I feel like I'm just being a horrible wife because I know it really bothers him. And I feel like because he knows how busy I am and how hard I'm working, he's really making an effort to not comment on it.
Yeah.
So I feel guilty that he's suffering in silence.
How I wish I could just drive over to your house. That is my favorite thing to do is clean your closet.
I know.
You've got so much going on. It's hard.
Yeah, this has been our hell month. Sarah and I talked about it on Happier in Hollywood. So I don't know. Maybe I should reframe it as when our hell month is over at work, it'll be a celebration.
Yes.
To be able to get my closet
there
back
you
in
go.
Order. It'll be some me time. I'll listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
And I'll clean up my closet and be happy that I have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah,
maybe that'll work.
That's a great reframing. There you go. There
you go. I will try. Okay, Gretch, what is your gold star this week?
Well, we always love to give gold stars to other podcasts, and I have a great podcast to give a gold star to. It is a podcast called But That's Another Story. Now, full disclosure, the host of it, Will Schwalbe, is a friend of mine. He's in one of my 3 children's literature reading groups, and so I knew about it because I knew Will was doing this podcast. I love it. So what he does is he has notable guests come on to talk about books that have changed them, that were the most meaningful to them. And it's one of these great things where if you really love to read the way I do, you're always looking for great new reading suggestions and things that are kind of off the beaten path that you might not have thought of. And so these are really interesting conversations that then make me give me great ideas for reading. So I read Christy Coulter's book, Nothing Good Can Come From This, because of a conversation I heard on the podcast. I pulled out Lori Moore's Who Will Save the Frog Hospital off my shelf. I read it years ago when it first came out, and now I'm I don't remember a thing about that book. I want to reread it. One of my favorite episodes was an interview with Kevin Kwan, who's well-known for having written Crazy Rich Asians, and he was talking about Joan Didion, who's one of my favorite writers. And so it's just a great podcast if you want to listen to a thoughtful conversation that then gives you a lot of great ideas for reading. So again, it's That's Another Story.
Well, that's what I can listen to when I clean my closet.
Yeah, and at the beginning, he always tells a little book-related anecdote from his own life that's just super charming. It's a very calming kind of, I think you would really, really enjoy it.
Can't wait. I'm always looking for a new podcast.
And that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. make an introduction. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you.
Thank you to our producer, Cameron Drews. Also, thanks to Kristen Meinzer and Andy Bowers of Panoply. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
And if you like the show, as always, please be sure to tell a friend. Show them how to listen to a podcast if they don't already know. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcast. The resources for this week. Are you looking for a funny gift for you or a friend? Remember that we have our tendency mugs. Yes, you can have a mug that proudly displays your tendency, your motto, or you can get one for a friend. I will put a link to that in the show notes, or you can always just go to gretchenrubin.com/shop, and they are there. And also, if you are reading The Happiness Project in a book group or a spirituality group or a work group or a group like that, I have book club guides, discussion guides on my site. So you can go to gretchenrubin.com/resources or just let me know that you would like to get it. I think, you know, now that the 10th anniversary edition is out, I just wanted to make sure that people knew about that resource.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward. So, Elizabeth, I saw Andy the other day, and I have given him a nickname, our beloved Andy Bowers. Guess what my nickname is?
I have no idea. What is it?
The Wizard of Pods.
Oh, I love it. That's hysterical. I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.